Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Tom Cruise, and your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to listen to this really, really great Sanspance radio podcast. Wow.
Ni hao, this is Boston actor Mark Wahlberg, and when I'm not busy waking up at 3 a.m. to pray and work out, you'll find me hitting the gritty at my local Vietnamese restaurant. Stay blessed.
We're back.
We're so back.
The boys.
It was Jova.
We're back.
It was Jova, but now we're so back.
Now we're Jova.
But we're about to be Jova again. It's well, fine. We have our core listeners.
I love how you always like assume that someone's mad and then just say it's fine.
It's fine.
You're getting ahead of it. Getting ahead of the complaints that don't exist.
Oh, there's no. We've given people ample warning.
Yeah.
In fact, we've probably given people more warning than like their parents.
We sent a red alert out to everyone's phone. Said
Amber
that it's Jova.
Yeah, we said it's
Amber
Jova.
Amber alert. Hey fam's Jova for a week and a half.
Yeah, if looking like Trump might be president again, and we have to stop the pod and work for the administration.
we're gonna put out one 45-minute episode in over the next fortnight, and mm-hmm. It's gonna be crazy.
We're actually gonna put this one 45-minute episode on Fortnite. I think.
Yeah, totally.
once a fortnight,
you'll be able to play in Fortnite as me, Angus, and Alexi.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the third skin.
Well, he wasn't in that episode.
Oh, I'm talking about the future.
Future. Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Could be someone we haven't even met yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Though wow. Fortnite is about nostalgia, isn't it? You'll be like, people will be like, oh, remember the last episode when Alexi was on?
Remember the 45
minute episode? That was
crazy.
That was like the fakest episode we've ever done.
I was so high.
I had no idea. It was Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. for those listening. And I was kind of at home just bumming around.
I was in between our friend Mitch's 40th and then DJing for my fifth of 9 5 shows in 11 days
that
or whatever.
Is a fraction, 5/9.
Yeah. 5/9. Yeah. And I took a handful of mushrooms that...
I had no idea. You guys seemed fine, just a little drunk.
Yeah, I was like just having a great time. I was just ready to talk to you about Ghibli movies.
And
just say the wrong names of things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Minutes.
Misgender Ghibli.
No, I think I said that like I kept confusing Poor Things and Past Lives.
Yeah, I get it. There was P's in the titles.
Yeah, yeah.
I also understand that.
Empathy.
Now when I look back on it, it was very ableist of me to get frustrated. No, I see that now.
The tour is over. I'm going to save all of my...
Adam song, the tour is over. I survived.
I'm going to save all of my...
Andrew song.
My tour chat and five goss for PayFam this week, where it belongs.
In the bean talk.
Man, there is some fucking bean talk
some
on its
bean
way.
War.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about beans in the paywalled episode, guys.
In short, Five Innocent. Love those fellas.
New ranking of British boy bands, number one, Five.
I want to talk to you more Ghibli, because we go to Ghibli Park, which is a place that I cannot wait to visit.
You got
to
fill in some blanks.
Yeah, and so I have only two that I've not yet watched,
which are
Up on Poppy Hill.
Oh yeah,
and Ocean Waves, which isn't even really a movie.
Well, I think it's as much as a movie as Hedwig and the Witch,
which you haven't watched.
No.
Ewig and the Witch.
Yeah,
Hedwig and the Angry Inch is what you're thinking of.
Yeah. I always get that mixed up.
Poor Things, Past Lives,
all over again. I have a few more to go. But I'll watch them. I'm also just going to download a bunch on my iPad to watch.
That's how I mean. It is such a sick thing to do on a plane.
Well, I was reading today, because Netflix is such dimwits, you have to like keep your iPad offline, because if it knows you're in a country where things aren't available, you can't even play them offline.
Ugh.
Dog shit energy.
Right, so you can't...
So I can download them all here.
Of course, they don't have the...
But of course, I want to use my, like, wife.
Yeah, because what cool anime is going to be on Netflix.
Because I want to be surfing the web when I'm in Japan.
Dude, I remember being in Japan and having Netflix there and watching... What was the Z Zansari's fucking show in Japan?
Oh,
what a loser.
What a loser you were. I watched all the Terrace House that wasn't available here.
Okay.
Because they were like, oh, for the West, we should release it 6 months after it comes out
and
four episodes at a time.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas in Japan, it was live. So they would show it every week. And I was like, what the hell?
Sometimes it sounds like you're saying Terrorist House.
Well, it ended up being one because the girl killed herself.
I mean, that's not what terrorists
do. That's why
I
got cancelled. Well, I mean, she was
eventually.
No, she was terrorized by bullies on the internet and killed herself.
Right.
Yep. So in a way, yes. Terrace House.
But I also want to talk about Shogun.
Don't talk too much about it.
The best shows of the year.
I'm behind.
You're up to episode 3. I mean, we haven't even... did we even mention that we were watching it last week?
And
who knows what the fuck happened in that 45
minutes. I don't know what happened.
Someone let me, our friend Lee Chan Lam said it was the best episode of HeyFam ever.
Really?
So I was like, okay, note taken. I'll take a handful of mushrooms before every episode.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Much of that was my HeyFam routine. See you later, kids.
I'm going to get California sober. I don't remember it being that good. So that's interesting. If you liked it, leave a comment in the review page.
Can we get 50?
Yeah, can we get 50? I don't know. Can we get much higher? Maybe.
I think she was just stoked because we're talking about Ghibli.
Oh, and we weren't really. I think you were mistitling it. And
yeah, who knows? I was actually talking about...
I think for a while you... Yeah.
Tintin.
Tintin?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. My favorite Ghibli character, Captain Haddock.
But yeah... Loving Shogun. It's on FX in the States and then Disney Plus everywhere else.
Yeah.
I missed it in the, is it early 80s?
The book.
There was a, late 70s, there was a book called Shogun. Mm. And what it is, it's basically about the first Englishman in Japan. And it's him versus...
Like we're about to be. We'll act like it anyway.
Yeah, for sure. But it's, I don't know if the Portuguese are as big a problem now as they were. When this book is set.
I did live in Petersham for a bit, and let me tell you,
yeah, well,
they're pretty rude to you at Franco.
they're really nice to me, but rude to my wife because she is Portuguese. And expect her to speak Portuguese.
Yeah,
and she doesn't.
I guess you are kind of shoguny when we think about it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my kids. It was Harmony Day at school.
What's
today.
That one?
It's where you like represent the cultures that you are.
Crazy.
And Tilly's like, she knows what traditional Portuguese dresses are, so. B dressed her up in that, and Archie was just like, can I just wear my school uniform? Like I'm like, Archie, you've got so many fun ones to pick from. You could be Lebanese, you could be Portuguese, you could be British, you could be Irish, and like, with every suggestion I could just hear he's like brain breaking, like, yeah. No, I just want to be Archie.
He just wore
a red t-shirt.
I actually really identify with your son.
Yeah.
That was you in our year 12 photo, you know, everyone gets like jerseys and writes stuff on the back.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I'm not getting it. I don't want one. I was like, they look really dumb, and this is our final
photo.
So
you don't think Archie will get Levino heat like I did?
I don't think so. No, I think he'll get a red t-shirt. Yeah. But our last photo, like our class, like, you know, grade photo, everyone's wearing theirs, and then there's me in the school uniform just like I'm not wearing that.
But there was a book first, then they made it was a TV series that I don't even know if it aired in Australia, but it kind of like
it was like a mini series,
took over the America. It was like one of the most watched things ever. Really? when it came out.
I know the guy was a POW, the author, and he kind of wrote 4 books in a loosely related series, basically about like Westerners experiencing the East. He was a POW in World War II in Changi,
mm-hmm.
and he wrote a book about that. So I think it goes throughout like a few centuries of the last 100 years of history, and kind of is about. I think he just got really interested in after his experience, and I know Shogun is like. Maybe canonically the first one he published, and then there was 3 more in the canonically it's not like the first one, but right. Yeah, it's the one that like was the biggest one.
Apparently, a lot of people are saying that this series reminds them of very early Game of Thrones, and apparently George R.R. Martin is a big fan of Shogun, the original book.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
But man, I'm having such a good time with the series. It's only 5 episodes in so far of 10.
I'm like 2 behind. I'll watch them this weekend.
Yeah.
I've just been booking this trip so much.
Episode 4 and 5 go so fucking hard.
Goat shit?
The best. There is a scene where they drink sake.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it's like a showdown between 2 men and over sake. And it's so fucking funny.
I can't wait.
So good. And so tense as well, just as you know, like only television can be like that, you know, like setting things up. I don't know. I feel like, you know, that there's a vibe.
The reason when you said that, I thought of Inglourious Basterds, and when they're doing things like sitting down and like lighting a pipe
beer
right. in the bar,
they're
you're like,
totally comparable
what the
things.
Fuck? You're like, yeah, this is like the most tense scene I've ever
but
seen.
It's that long form build up, right?
Sure.
And yeah, it's a
sure. Really, when you really cook for a couple hours with some characters, you get to know them. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. And so the main character is played by the greatest named actor of our generation.
I'm going to say now, maybe early contender for In the Guy of the Year.
Yeah, absolutely. His name is Cosmo Jarvis.
Cosmo Jarvis. He sounds like a NME an artist at NME would have loved in 2006.
He sounds like someone that AI created just for you and me to be happy about.
Oh, totally. But his name makes him sound like a band. Like the lead singer of a band that NME would.
I think a band, straight up.
You're completely right that they would have faffed over.
Like it's like Jamiroquai's drummer, Cosmo Jarvis.
Great headline last week that I sent you that was essentially saying, if you think his voice is weird in this, he had a weirder one that producers told him to tone it down.
Release the he doesn't sound Cosmo like that. Cut.
Yeah. Even in the show, like that's a voice he's putting on.
Wow.
It's just, it's so good. He's just, he really is like Tom Hardy.
Get up, you piece of shit.
Austin Butler. Room for me in the gang of night boys with
barking
nice
insults like to people who can't understand him.
It's great.
Rocks.
Yeah, it rules. And he hates showering.
Oh, yeah.
He's dirty. The Japanese bathe and he's like...
Oh, episode 5 is like all about how insane British people are at cooking.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
And the Japanese just fucking hate it. Of course. It's so good.
It's as we've constantly said, we do change our opinions along this podcast and that's part of growing. But one thing we have stood by is British cuisine, like, which the pay fam is going to be about.
His thoughts on cuisine are so bad that someone actually dies.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would seppuku myself if, I mean, shit, imagine Shogun if they cast the bean guy in the role. How long do you think he'd last?
Scotty Beans. Yeah, I don't know. It was very fun talking to them about
beans,
the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We'll get into it.
They'd have such a fascinating life. They've been in a boy band since they were like 19. Oh, probably younger.
Yeah.
And they're in their, 40s?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're in the same boy band. Like, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. One hosts a radio show, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was doing some deep dive.
The Beanman, yeah, yeah.
The Beanman has a radio. Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, fascinating stuff.
Great band. So many hits.
When the Lights Go Out, that's the only one I really remember.
Right.
Baby, when the lights go out.
I definitely don't need to hear any of their music for a while. But
not until
they give
you the call again.
Exactly. I'm ready and waiting for the call.
It's wild. I love that for you.
I actually got Richie from Five into Shogun. He sent me a text.
Is that
saying,
Beanman?
No. I would say he's the cool one.
Is he the bald one?
No.
No.
Why would he be the cool one?
I don't know. There's very few cool bald people. I want to give it to him. Sorry if you're bald and listen to this.
Mr. Magoo.
I was thinking Larry David.
Yeah,
he's cool.
Okay. Yeah, sure. But yeah, he texted me the other day saying, have you watched episode 4 of Shogun yet?
That rules. Where was he? Was he in Greenwich Mean Time at that point? Had he gone home?
It was 5 a.m. when he sent me the text.
5 time.
Yeah, 5. It's true.
It's when 5 wake up. It's part of being... It's why the other two left. They're like, I've got to actually have a sleeping, guys.
Fuck, I had it after like... Trying to like be like, oh, no, I've got to, I'm going to try and rest. Mm. I had a night on the pints with him.
Yeah, fuck, did you have to?
It was one of the worst hangovers in my life.
What were you drinking? Like Guinness or something?
Like ales that were like 8% and up alcohol.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And like I was downing them. And
light
then,
beers for a British person.
And I'm pretty sure I got so drunk that I got COVID. Because I actually had COVID like when I got back from the tour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your immune system was like, give him COVID.
My voice dropped like so. It's like when I used to record hungover.
Yeah, you'd be like,
hello.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's really funny. Where were you guys on that night out? Like, which city?
Perth. Okay. I found the only bar open in Perth, and it was this like shitty rock and roll dive bar.
That rules.
It was like they saw Frankie's in Sydney and thought,
"Oh, okay,
like,
so hold my."
But it was the loudest,
hold my overpriced,
the
beer.
Loudest venue I've ever been in my life.
I don't get the loud venues, man. I remember that was I took umbrage when I went to the first like Mary's in Sydney.
Yeah.
Just sitting upstairs, like had to book a table. It wasn't like a casual bar. And like, you just can't hear.
The food is so good at Mary's. And I love that they're like, oh, we'll pair like really good burgers with like natural wines and like decent beers. That's an awesome ethos. But they opened one up my way. I was so excited to take the kids there.
Yeah.
No, and you
wines.
Go in there and it's a brand new, no, they've got all the good shit.
Oh, sure.
But it's a brand new venue and they've just covered, they've gotten all the staff to like graffiti the walls.
Okay.
And it's like, this Earn person that. Is a cocksucker.
That's crazy.
I'm like, dude, it's fucking 2 p.m. and I'm taking my kids out to lunch.
Do you know where
that... I don't want to have to explain to them what a cocksucker
well,
is.
Well, can I suggest McDonald's?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you
for
go
sure.
There,
yeah.
Ain't no cocksucking written on the wall. That's left to
it's
the imagination.
Scrubbed out every night.
Where it should be. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I went to Mary's once and they have candles everywhere, like as their lights. I had a North Face backpack. Someone knocked their candle. My backpack caught on fire. The staff didn't care and I couldn't hear anything.
The staff, he said, hey, my backpack's on fire and they gave you a shucker.
Literally. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, well, I can't hear anything. The food was fine. It tasted like food. It was like,
No, they're good burgers.
But I kind of prefer a McDonald's one, personally.
Get fucked.
Respectfully, fuck you.
Get fucked.
Yeah, okay, let's break it down value-wise.
Don't even do this.
No, it's a burger.
Yeah, I know, but you don't know what the fuck is in your McDonald's burger.
I tell you what I know, though. It tastes great every time.
Yeah, no.
But they didn't care. You know what would happen to my back when I'm fired at McDonald's? Like, I would have had like 20 people over there putting it out.
So they would have escorted you straight to the house with no steps.
It would have been amazing. Yeah. They just like shuckered me literally and I couldn't hear. And I was like, this place sucks. That was my bad memories. And I've been burnt literally.
Well, yeah, literally since. Burnt. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I'm never coming back here. And I haven't.
But this venue in Perth was like the only place open past 1 a.m. on a Thursday or whatever night it was.
I get it.
And the DJ, who was playing to, I think, 8 people, including the bar staff. So
probably 3 more than usual.
Yeah. He played Ballroom Blitz into a Tool song.
Which Tool song?
I know two Tool songs. You know, it was neither of those.
Now, I don't know a lot about DJing, but I definitely know those two songs were not the same BPM or time signature. Especially not time signature. Yeah, Tool songs are in like 12, 14. Yeah. Like they're in like some bizarre like math metal shit. That's crazy. I mean... good on him.
Yeah, it wasn't Hooker with a Penis or Stink Fist.
Stink Fist, yeah. What's Schism or something?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. It wasn't, I guess it wasn't.
Tool are like, they're so funny.
Yeah, I mean, everyone went through a Tool phase in high school and when I was in high school.
I remember like people trying to get me into Tool and I was just like, this is goofy as hell. Yeah. And, like, I like movie, like, I have nothing against goofy music, but at least the people I listen to goofy music, they like owned that it was goofy. I'm like, right. These guys just feel like...
all the bungleheads in your year.
Yeah. I'm just like, these guys just feel like they like they haven't left uni. Like
it's the ultimate like, oh, you haven't heard music till you've heard this. It was like, yeah, if a Radiohead fan like leveled up.
Yeah, Radiohead fans, Radiohead I think, are far more complicated. Like Radiohead people, like, you know, I like Radiohead, for example, but you can see the joke, but at least a Radiohead person, you feel like you could take home and introduce to your parents, where a Tool person,
I would
like,
blame most of me getting into hip hop on Tool and the Mars Volta. A combination of Tool, Radiohead, and the Mars Volta.
I remember Tom York, remember when... like
that Mars Volta record?
Yeah, I didn't get into the Mars Volta. I was like, this is goofy. I loved At the Drive-In.
But everyone was so sincere about it. Probably Muse are a factor as well.
Yeah.
Like, just like this inescapable like wall of noise. And I was like,
I remember getting into like DJ production and beats because of Tom York. It was like around OK Computer and stuff. And he was like, oh, I'm really into this artist called DJ Shadow. And then finding introducing in like 98 or 99 through
that. I was
so
insufferable as I like got into that kind of music.
That rules.
Like I remember just spending all my money on imported hip hop CDs because everyone, one person produced this thing and then the rapper from that collaborated on this album.
But I mean, that's what you and I do. Like we love that. We get interested in stuff and then we're like, oh, I want to know more. And now, you know, this is now like back in my day, I walked to school 5 miles, but it's pretty amazing now that like your kids can just like jump on YouTube or streaming.
Oh, it takes you 1 second to figure out who produced something now.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You have to like import CDs, pay cash, wait 6 weeks for a fucking plastic disc to show up.
The amount sometimes of records pay $100. I spent $50 on.
Yeah. That sucks, but it's also great.
Yeah, but I never spent $50 on a Mars Volta album.
No.
Who I assume are fine. I just remember like the sincerity with which the people that were into them were into them.
I just remember like I really liked At the Drive-In. I really loved Relationship of Command.
It's like, get away.
That's that record, put out by Grand Royal, the Beastie Boys label.
Hell yeah.
One of the only other acts to get put out by them. But I love that record. One Arms is Relationship of... No, what was it? Oh, what's the other big song? There was One Arms is, but then there was...
I'm sure to everyone.
Great song. They split up and two of them made Mars Volta and they got like...
Oh, that's the connection.
Okay, that's why I kept saying that. They split up. Half of them became Sparta. They kind of post hardcore.
Like, we just talking
band.
About music we like now.
And then,
which is like part of the course. For
and then the other half became Mars Volta.
Right.
Like Cedric and the Afro guys became Mars Volta.
Yep.
And then they just got like real like, yo, mind if I put out a 17 minute like acid like punk song?
Yeah.
And like take it really seriously.
And then I feel like I got like a lot of radio. I got given a radio show because I was like the hip hop indie rock guy. But like weird twee shit. And then I got really into Lightning Bolt and almost lost my radio show because I kept playing Lightning Bolt songs.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
That's really funny, Lightning Bolt. Like, they played at Manning Bar. I remember the first time I met Arturo. I had to go meet him and then he like it was on a weekend, and it was to find out if I could start interning at Modular back then.
Yep.
And it was like he's, oh, it was 2008. If he's like 50, it was maybe like late 30th, like probably our age. And they were going to a Saturday afternoon show, a 6 p.m. show to see Lightning Bolt at the Manning Bar.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to go. I'm going to go home. But that's so funny.
So Lightning Bolt were like a two piece. It was a drummer who put contact mics on all of his drums. Mm. And I think he was the singer too.
Yeah, I think so.
And singing was, it's more like, rah, 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 yeah. Like you're just kind of like chant along. Were they like, the
California?
And then a guy who had like some fucking Les Claypool ass shit where it's like a drummer, where it's like a one bass string and two and a half guitar strings. And I remember like, I guess the equivalent of me walking into Mary's at 2 p.m. on a Sunday and seeing
Cocksucker
all over the wall, like playing a Lightning Bolt song at like 4:30 as people are driving home from work.
They're from Rhode Island.
So many people would complain.
Rhode Island formed in 94.
Mad.
That's awesome.
Their documentary is really, really funny.
Oh, cool.
Because you can just smell how bad they would stink.
You know it smells crazy in there. Yeah, damn. You know, like, no shirts, shit, sleeves survive around them, right?
Did we somehow get to this from Shogun?
I don't know. I think so. Who cares? But you know, like, sleeves on those shirts don't survive in that band.
No.
Those things are getting the chop. Like, that is a sleeveless band.
Sleeveless society.
Yeah. SS.
So Shogun rocked. Rocks,
speaking of SS, if we're talking about things that rocked, not the SS, but I saw the Zone of Interest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The comedy of the year.
There are bits that are kind of like offbeat, not like The Office cringe.
Speaking of
like,
Jamiroquai, we made a Jamiroquai reference.
Oh yeah.
Well, he made the Jonathan Glazer directed Virtual Insanity. He did.
Obviously, the fan. This is the sequel. Around. Yeah, yeah. This is the sequel. This is the prequel.
All right.
This is what happened. This is why we got Virtual Insanity, because of this horrible thing. No, amazing movie. Really good. Fantastic. Like,
should I see it? Big screen, because it will just.
I think so. It just kind of forces you to pay attention. Yeah. Like there are, I don't want to say anything about it. It's cool. There's some really interesting things that I'm just not used to seeing. I guess visually in a period World War II film. And do you know about the way it was shot? So it was like a house and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Normally, like, you know, they will build like a house, like even in like a movie like Meet the Parents, like it's not a real house, it's a set.
Mm-hmm.
So they can put like cameras around and have like crew standing. This, they had cameras all in the house and the director and stuff would be outside and they would do like a 40-minute scene, like the whole take. So it kind of just like tracks them through the house, almost like, not like surveillance footage, but the camera's always still. And there's so many, and they would just do takes without the director like interfering and it's really fascinating. And you really can tell while watching it.
Yeah, right.
It's a really interesting way of like shooting.
So this is one of the few Academy Awards that Oppenheimer didn't get for sound, right?
Sound, yeah. Sound. And it's really, I can see, like it has really masterful sound design.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because they live like literally next door to Auschwitz, but you never see the camp.
Yeah, I really want to see it. And Glazer is a goat for
his speech. That speech
was crazy. And also like learning the context of who was with him when he made the speech.
Yeah.
He's one of the main backers and like their connections to Israel. And
Yeah. Really interesting speech. And he's Jewish.
Yep.
Yeah. No, fascinating.
And then all the fucking losers that have like
signed a thing. Like stop trying to erase our Jewishness. Dude,
he wasn't going to put you in a movie anyway.
Yeah, like, you were never going to be in it. Incredible film.
You're not going to be in the Zone of Interest too.
You are not in his Zone of Interest. Yeah. Let's just say that you're in his Zone of Disinterest if you keep up this attitude. Loved it. Fantastic film. Another bummer that like a film from last year that we just get at the start of the next year.
Yeah,
the
shit
is trained. Yeah.
Unfortunately not showing that one at Event Cinema.
That one's not playing in 4DX. Yeah. Not yet.
I almost went and saw the new Gundam movie this week in 4DX. Sugoi,
Friends of the show. Put that one out, didn't they?
Yeah, dropped it to Sugoiko. Released that one
Gundam
in Australia.
Gundam Seed, I believe.
But I heard it's like a sequel to...
It's like a part three to a series or something.
And
I'm
I find Gundam confusing anyway.
I think Gundam fans find Gundam confusing. There are so many timelines. There's like reboots. There's like... I find it similar to Star Trek where there are so many like... They're like, oh no, this is one that's a prequel to the original series. You know what I mean? It's just... It's very...
I started reading that manga run. The
oh yeah.
The
yeah,
origin
yeah, yeah.
one, which I liked, but I not which, it still didn't...
I know I did the intro.
I didn't quite get its hooks in me. But one day I'll get into Gundam.
And much like a sandworm in Dune.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Well, look. You've said the names of two movies that link to something that we've been given, a secret guest A secret gift has come from a secret listener.
Incredible. Okay.
And we thank them greatly for the gift of two books.
Yeah. What's better than one book?
What's it, sorry?
It's better than one book.
It's true, but
it's two books. It's a library.
He said, hey, these are for you and Angus. I'll let you guys decide whose is whose.
Okay.
I looked at both of these and I was like, well, I don't get either of these.
Are they volumes one and two of Dick Fight Island? Pop-up book?
Okay, so here's the first book. The first book is the most youth shit ever.
Oh, why do you think I'd like that?
So it's Unleashing Oppenheimer inside Christopher Nolan's explosive atomic age thriller.
Can you see a spot on my bookshelf where it can go?
Written by Jada Yuan and forward by Christopher Nolan.
Can you see the Tenet book over there?
Oh, wow. You're waiting
for
it.
And then next to the Tom Cruise book, the Christopher Nolan book.
Yeah, perfect.
I think it could go there.
Look at that beautiful photo on the back of Oppie himself. Just makes you want to smoke, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
Should I take this to Japan? Should I read it on the plane?
But then... from our mysterious gifter.
Our backer.
So we've mentioned this book in the past, and I don't think either of us thought we would own it this soon. Here we have from Dune 2.
Oh my God.
We have a book that's written by Greg Fraser. It's called Exposures, but he's not the only
poetry
writer.
Poetry by
this
Mr.
Book.
Josh Thanos, that's right. Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
Dude, which one do you want?
During the making of Denis Villeneuve's film adaptations of Dune, Greg Fraser, the director of photography, kept an extensive visual record of the filming, capturing intimate moments with the cast and crew. Josh Brolin, who plays Gurney Halleck, added his poetry and his recollections to these extraordinary images, giving readers rare insights into these phenomenal films with this unique book.
I have a feeling I know where that could go. I have a certain popcorn.
They're both yours.
Are you sure?
I can't lay claim to either of these.
Why do you take one?
No. It's fine.
Really?
I love that you were like, take one, like thrusting the Oppenheimer.
No, I'll take that. Like, I'll obviously order the Dune book.
The Dune book is off the charts. No, they both belong to you. It's fine. I got plenty of books.
Oh, man.
If anything,
that's
I have
so
too
fine.
Many books.
Thanks, Kendall. That's probably from a bit. Man, let me hit the light.
Yeah.
Siri, go full lights in the living room.
We're gonna read out some poetry.
Yeah. Josh Brolin, don't sue us. That Siri just brought up Josh Brolin, don't sue us.
Oh, my God. This is a beautiful book, too. It's like bound. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Greg. Oh, I love that shot on the left of...
So where's the poetry at?
It's that.
Here we go. Here's one under a picture of Josh Brolin himself.
Oh, wow.
This day will soon dim as the sculpted sand exhales softly.
I mean,
night.
Beautiful stuff, isn't it?
I love that he's a poet.
Same. Oh, wait. There's this...
You're a science experiment that foiled, and the failure of it is the consequence of your denial. We all need a random wild to run us through when we least expect it.
Yeah.
A love that tornadoes through you. Laughter that... Big, big gap in the page. Breaks. Big, big, big gap. Bones. Silences which can only be heard by a thirst that... And then not only is there a big gap, but then...
It's like on a where you would normally put a number of the page.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this is where the number...
down the bottom of the page it says hurts.
In the bottom right corner. This is fascinating.
Wow, he's really, really had fun. Oh, wow. This one even has like tumbling letters.
Dude went crazy on Microsoft Word. Oh, my God. Wow, that's so beautiful. Damn.
Wow, this one has a big line through it.
Oh, wow.
Wow, this is a fucking cool thing.
Well, the HeyFam library just got two more books. That's amazing. Thank you. Wow.
Thanks, mysterious gifter. And you can send us a mysterious gift by...
hitting up Levin, saying don't mention us on the podcast. Yep. And then we will dead name you. Wow, that's amazing. Are you sure?
Yeah, man. They're yours.
That's crazy.
I expect excerpts from the poetry book over the next few episodes.
Yeah, I'll upload them to the Patreon so we get a cease and desist from Brolin Industries.
Amazing.
That's crazy. That's funny because the last gift I got is from a listener, also one of trashfire.com fame. And as you can see up there on my...
Trashwire.
Trashwire, what did I say?
Trashfire.
Oh, Trashfire. Trashwire, I don't know why I said that.
I think
that.
Trashwire might be a play on Trashfire, right?
I think so, yeah. And it is a popcorn bucket from the film Dune, the famous...
The fuckable
fleshlight.
Popcorn
and bucket. I was like, what can I give you for it? Can I please lower your details? I want to send you some money.
There's poetry at the bottom of the bucket, right? That Josh Brolin wrote?
It's much like poetry. It comes from inside. It's something else at the bottom of it. She said, look, this is a gift. However... If you see anything in Japan that's RRR related.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, I think I might find something because, you know, there's those figures.
Oh, man, there's so much good shit. Well, even if they're still
Hello Kitty,
screening.
The Sanrio stuff.
I've got a bunch of it coming to my house next week. But they're still screening RRR in Japanese cinemas every day.
What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah, yes. And every screening sells out.
Dude, should we go see it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have to go see it there.
Yeah, let's go see
it. Wow, because I never got to see it at cinemas.
I know, it'd be incredible.
Did you?
No,
you didn't either. Yeah, yeah, okay, great.
Still one of the best nights of my life watching that on Saturday.
That was
night.
A really nice time.
Yeah, man. All right.
Imagine, should we get up and film ourselves dancing?
Yeah, for sure.
Should we
let off fireworks in the cinema?
I better not take the Oppenheimer book on the plane then, because... they'll think it's something.
That would be amazing if you hollow out the Oppenheimer book and fill it with fireworks.
And they're like, what are you doing? Why are you flying to Japan with this? This is so many hate crimes.
And now, a word from our really, really great sponsors. Trust me, I know a lot about good deals, folks, and this is a great deal.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We go to Japan soon.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why...
it hasn't really hit me.
I gave myself some like, okay, you need to get through this content before you go
away. Yeah.
So I watched...
I had those plans and then my life got turned upside down.
Okay, the Fresh Prince.
That's why I said Kitty got sick. And so everything got put on the back burner.
Is she all good now? She's fine. Shaved tummy?
Yeah, she's fine. She's knocking on all wood.
I had to spend a lot of money at the orthodontist today for Tilly.
What are we talking?
We're talking 3K plus.
Wow. Is it, like, for what?
A plate to because her teeth are...
It'll push them forward or something?
She's lost heaps of baby teeth, but the new ones aren't coming through. So
it's because she lost some young or something?
I don't know. I don't know how fucking teeth work.
Yeah, weird.
But the plate will stretch her top of her mouth out, and then hopefully the bottom one will follow too.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's wearing for like 9 months.
That's so much money.
But you get to choose the color.
Pink?
Turquoise.
Oh, that's cool.
Turquoise with the picture of a star and her initials.
And she'll never get to see it.
It's in her mouth. You take it out when you eat and when you brush your teeth.
That's cool. Kids taking out plates is one of those great, good, gross out moments.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's real something you could see Kevin McAllister getting upset about in a Home Alone film.
So my homework was I had to watch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 Studio Ghibli movies.
Mission accomplished. I've done nine
of them. Wind Rises was the only Miyazaki movie that I hadn't seen.
That's right.
Watched that on a plane. Absolutely adored it.
Yeah, like, it's incredible.
It deserved the Oscar the year that...
Well, wait, like Shrek Frozen, 4 or something? Yeah, Frozen. Yeah, it was 2013. What came out then? Frozen.
Frozen or Zootopia or something.
Yeah, I think it was Frozen. I've told you before, but now it probably is like better to tell you because you've seen it. I saw that in Roppongi at the Mori Tower.
Awesome.
Like the week it came out and silence in the whole theater afterwards. Like kind of like, it was like seeing Oppenheimer. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was a very poignant film.
Well, I think they're good. Like a double screening of that would be pretty 100%. Powerful.
Yeah. And it was the very same week that Miyazaki was in the press lot because he was being
He gave a press conference like shortly after it.
Well, not about the retirement. That came also when I was in the same trip. But he was basically, people were saying like, oh, you're like anti-Japan with this film. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I'm anti-war. Like, he was being really criticized by the media when I was there. And they were kind of like, at the time, it was like a very, I think it was like quite a right-wing government at the time, or like center-right at least. And so he was coming under quite a lot of scrutiny. Oh,
every creative in Japan is like passionately left-wing.
And,
you know,
very anti-war. Yeah. Mishima wasn't, but that's a different story. That's a...
every creative that, like most of the, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I feel like a greater, there isn't like a right wing arm of entertainers like America has.
Well, no, the Joe Rogan pod experience hasn't like really made it over there yet, where they're getting a platform. But you know, they're definitely out there.
They just have pedos.
They have pedophiles, and right, you know, being right wing in Japan is very like, they are very nationalist. Like,
yeah,
far
for
more
sure.
than
yeah.
like the average American, even. But that aside,
yeah, I'm definitely talking out my ass. In
yeah. but fascinating film experience. The only bad thing was, while before the film started, it was such a somber, everyone was quiet. No, as you know, no one talks in cinemas. And the fucking Minions came out to like introduce like the theater. Like, they were like the turn off your phone thing, and it's just like, it's just like, I'm like, why do we have these motherfuckers up in here? But watched it without subs, and then I caught it when it came to Australia, maybe like 4 or 5 months later, cinemas, saw it with subs then. And like I told you, from Up on Poppy Hill, and although like I'm sure it was the same with you with Slam Dunk, you just kind of like, oh, I got it, because like they're such well-made films that the dialogue, you know, not to be not like being the Denny thing where he's like, oh, dialogue secondary, but when a film is made so well, and film is above all, you know, sound was introduced after film, silent films, it's visual. And like, if you're a great storyteller, you and a director, you can tell your story with just images.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I guess to expand on my stupid sentence a minute ago, I guess that like most Japanese creatives are like that classic left wing where like they don't, it's not about like,
it's anti-authority.
Yeah, so. For not sure.
Like,
exactly,
yeah. It's like more of a like against the bigger thing. But it's the one movie I do want to see dubbed, only for Werner Herzog as his German friend.
Okay.
Which is impeccable casting.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I almost wish that he learnt Japanese and did the role in the Japanese cut. And what do you think of Anno's acting?
Yeah, very understated, but suited.
Have you
the
seen
role.
Kingdom of Dreams and...
No.
Oh, you have to watch it. You know what it is, don't you?
Yeah, it's the doco, right?
Like, the doco, it's like around that period, so it's like the making of that film, but it's also the making of... it's more of the B-plot. It's Princess Kaguya.
Awesome.
And it's like, it's where all of the gifts have come from. Like, oh, look at this cat. It does nothing all day. Like,
okay,
all that.
Yeah, sure.
And like, there's this great scene. Now that you've seen it, there's this great moment where he's like, they don't tell you who, but apparently like the top three actors, like screen actors, not voice actors, all auditioned and agents had for the role of Hiro. And he's just sitting there and he like looks at Suzuki, like, you know, the producer that he's worked with for years. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we don't see them, but we're to expect they're people on par of like Leo, Brad Pitt, like huge names. And he's just like, it's going to be Anno. Cause like they taught Anno stuff. And he's like, yeah, but he's not an actor. And he's like, it has to be him. And then you see like Anno, and he's so much like shit. He's like, I don't want to do, he's like, I'm not an actor. And he's like, this is for you. Like, just go try. And it's like,
get in the vocal booth.
Kenji. Half of the film is him trying to convince him to do it.
Wow.
And he's just like,
man, I got
in the middle
shit.
Of creating two of the rebuild movies, and he's so stressed, and he's like, but he's also like, I love, like, Miyazaki gave me my start, like,
because
he, you know, animated a lot of the big like creatures in Nausicaa and stuff. It's man, it's the best. It's like watching the fucking, it's our Infinity War or Endgame. You're just like, it's just goats. And then during the time, they're like, oh, Kaguya has been delayed again, and you're just like, these guys love taking 10 years to make a movie.
I mean, you watch Princess Kaguya and
God,
you're like,
stunning.
Oh, I understand why.
I feel very lucky. So I've actually seen, since Spirited Away, every film at the cinemas.
Except Earwig and the Witch.
Well, I won a ticket to see
yeah,
it
yeah,
and
yeah.
then it had finished by the time I went to go see it, because it was during COVID, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I even saw Tales of Earthsea.
So we'll get to Goro in a minute. I watched all of Takahata's movies because I guess like you have all the Miyazaki movies.
So there's obviously Grave of the Fireflies.
I've seen that before.
Yeah, I can't watch it again.
I actually really want to watch it again.
I do, but I can't. I was in that bummer month and I was just like, I can't fucking watch these.
Yeah.
Not with this Oppenheimer book in my hand. just feels wrong.
But so I watched his movies only yesterday, Pompoko, My Neighbors the Yamadas.
That's what I have to watch.
And Tale of Princess Kaguya.
Yeah.
And obviously Princess Kaguya is like the masterpiece. It's his final work before
and
he died.
I think like the gap between it and his other films was like over a decade. Yeah. I mean, it's very similar to it's similar to Wind Rises and Heron. And, you know, like it is such a long, long thing. And the animation of that film is insane.
He just gets more and more creative as an animator.
Yeah. Well, none of his two films, besides Grave of the Fireflies and Only Yesterday, like none of the films really resemble one another stylistically, because Yamada's is like the digital animation that looks like the comic strip.
Yep.
And Pompoko is very different to Only Yesterday and Fireflies, which he employs like in those two films. And almost like realistic anime, because you notice like they have cheeks and stuff, like they look really weird. The first, you have to takes like a few minutes to get used to Only Yesterday, because like when they smile, their faces do things that anime faces don't normally do.
So Only Yesterday and Pompoko are like immediate some of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. I preferred Only Yesterday.
For Pompoko, for me, I don't know what I think I guess it was like that incredible yokai, like the ghost parade.
Yeah, that was
and
great.
Then how like how fun that movie can be, but then how crushingly sad it is at the end.
Yeah.
And but also how like matter of fact the ending can be.
It's so interesting that it and Mononoke are like 5 years apart, and they're almost like both directors telling the same story through their own lens and interests. Like they're both about humans destroying the environment and sympathize with the animals and the nature that's being destroyed. And they're both so different, both play so well on like Japanese legend. Like, you know, obviously Tanuki and raccoon dogs like are such a big part of like Japanese culture and lore. Yeah. And obviously Mononoke borrows a lot from like that, I forget which period it is. It starts with M. But yeah, it's so interesting that they both in the 90s were like, let's do our environmental films.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yeah. And I feel like, Miyazaki's a bit more mournful with Mononoke, whereas
This one has
Pompoko
like a
is very matter of fact,
but it's also like a nice hopeful ending, which I found is like, I don't know, maybe it's kind of like, yes, things change, but I'll find a way to hang out with both. You know how he's like a businessman, but then like sees him at the end and like flies over and kind of ends on like a happy note.
I loved how silly that movie was. And for me,
the first time when he's like, what do you guys think you're sitting on right now? And he's like, they're my balls. I was like, this is crazy. It's like 5 minutes in. I was like, this is crazy. That scene, man, when they get the elders and it's those three and they come to like the train station.
Yeah,
and I was like, they're the coolest looking characters in any Ghibli movie ever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, these guys smoke loud.
So of all
you smoke too loud, you're bitch too bad. Like, it was crazy.
Of all the movies that I watched, those were my two like absolute biggest hits. Like, so that was crazy. Just, I was like, they're like,
I feel like
I gave them both like 4.5 stars on Letterboxd, and I think if I were to watch them again, I give them both 5.
I definitely like, Only I Say is an instant 5 for me.
Yeah.
I just feel so bad that I, not bad, but I'm like, you know, fucking Lasseter really pilled the Western world with Miyazaki and made us kind of led to believe that Hayao Miyazaki was single-handedly Studio Ghibli.
Yep.
But I think the worst part about that is like Takahata's films got really sidelined.
Yeah, for sure. Besides Grave of the Fireflies. Grave of the Fireflies, that's one everyone watches. But
yeah, and I guess also a lot of people watch that because it's like considered one of the great anti-war films ever made. But also like I think a lot of people watch that in like universities and like film, but also history classes and stuff, as it's like such a lifelike depiction of the events.
Yeah, for sure. So then outside of, oh yeah, also My Name is the Yamadas is like one of the strangest films in the Ghibli canon. It is a adaptation of a comic strip. And it
Yamadas?
Yeah. And it doesn't have a like an ongoing plot.
It's like
it's like little bits.
Yeah.
And
it's like they made a movie out of 40 Garfield strips.
And it's like, yeah, well, it's yeah.
Like non-sequitur.
And like the there's a little girl in it, and all the cartooning is meant to come from her point of view.
Right.
Which is why it's like quite rough and childlike.
Yeah.
It's a crazy like decision to like just be so faithful to the artwork and like what it's like to read the strip.
Are all of his adaptations, I guess Pompoko isn't because it's like legend. Is only Yesterday an original story? Or is that based off a manga?
I think it might be, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of unpublished manga.
Unpublished.
Oh, sorry, untranslated. Oh,
untranslated.
Manga,
yeah, and I don't know if Grave of the Fireflies is based on, but obviously Yamada's is, and Princess Kaguya is like a bamboo cutter's daughter.
I think this
is
why I like his movies so much, is that like a lot of Miyazaki's movies kind of fall apart at the end.
Well, they're very, they get very like, especially like his later films. But I mean, obviously not Wind Rises, which is a very grounded film, but they kind of become very surreal and they're like, more about feeling and they're not about logic.
And then like a bunch of stuff will come to a end and nothing will wrap up the way you would expect it to. And
but you know, that's like a over. That's like a Japanese story. Yeah, yeah. So the West has three acts. It's like it's interesting. Japan, I was listening about this somewhere. Japan has like a five act structure, and this goes back centuries, like even earlier than centuries with their storytelling. And a big part of Japanese storytelling, which does feel jarring a lot to a lot of Western audiences and, you know, myself too, which when I wasn't used to, it's not quite Deus Ex Machina, but it's like an unrelated event will occur and it kind of like the film will end when it happens and it doesn't really have a lot to do with the setup. And it's almost like Western films that they're almost like they're almost too convenient. It's like, well, we have to have something that's hinted at the start because then that makes sense for the film. But it's almost really interesting because Japanese films, like, random shit in life happens all the time. Like, my cat getting sick. There was no foreshadowing for me.
For sure, of course.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it's, in a way, neither's better or neither's worse. It's cool that there's different, like, act structures from different cultures. But it's like, I really do get the other one. It's very interesting because, like, sometimes life will throw you a fucking sick cat or like a weird, you know, like birds shitting on you, like, or whatever. And you just have to kind of be like, okay, like, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. But I kind of, you do get the feeling that he's making it up as he goes along, which is kind of the fun of it's some vibe. Of his movies.
He's a true artist.
A lot of Tezuka manga that I read feels the same.
Yeah. Way. It's like vibe. It's like, you know, I have the idea and it's just, let's see where this goes.
Whereas Takahata's movies feel very, very premeditated. Like he knows every, maybe Pompoko is like the exception to that rule, but everything like the only Yesterday ending is like so, so satisfying.
It's the best. It's like the closest thing to like a traditional ending in a Ghibli film. The closest thing I can think of is like Ponyo.
Ponyo's like, ending's insane.
But I love it. It ends with like them uniting essentially. Yeah, but sure. Then doesn't explain anything. It doesn't be like, well, they're going to live together and he's going to live under the sea. Spirited Away, very satisfying ending.
Yeah, yeah.
The river finds out he's the river and she
But is this, there is this like very, very heightened like, oh God, quick wrap things up.
I find that more in any Miyazaki film than I find that in the Miyazaki film more than any other Howl's Moving Castle.
Yep.
Where they're just like, oh, the scarecrow that's kind of been just bouncing around, that's actually this prince of this nation that we need to save. And remember, it's like the final song of the credits has started playing and they start like being like, oh, this is the prince, the war's over now, and you're like, there was a war? it's insane. But, you know, it's very interesting.
So the outside of Takahata and Miyazaki, I love Kaguya, by the way. Princess Kaguya.
It's amazing.
But like, not as weird and wonderful as his other movies. So I was...
No, it's very serious and traditional.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see that Sydney Film Festival premiered at maybe 2014, 15, State Theatre. Stunning. Just those shots. I just remember the teeth with the black teeth and shots of like the running through.
Oh,
and
man.
Like,
so
the scene where she like runs through like
brilliant storytelling.
Oh my God. And it's so cool. Yeah. She's so cute as she's a baby.
And like one of those movies where you like it ends and I was like, huh. And then I've been thinking about it. Like, yeah. And ending
how
that
cute
ending
is she
means,
when he finds her?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking
totally.
Cute as hell.
Yeah.
On my baby Yoda shit.
But I watched, Whisper of the Heart, which we talked about briefly last week.
Yeah. I liked Whisper of the Heart.
Yeah.
Feels like,
Country Roads, baby.
Concrete Roads. It's so slice of lifey, that one, isn't it? It's so cool.
Well, that's like, based on a manga too.
And did you read up on the Cat Returns, like I was telling you, like what the story was behind it?
No.
So after Whisper of the Heart, so maybe it was after Mononoke. Yeah, that came out after Mononoke and Spirited Away. Ghibli were approached by a theme park company that the theme park doesn't exist, but they were basically commissioned. Can you come up? We want you guys to design a ride. And I think they were all very excited because it was like their first big project outside of films.
Yep.
And they were like, you know what? That cat sequence was very popular in Whisper of the Heart. We should make a ride. They were like, internally, we should make a ride off that. And their kind of thing was like, can you guys make like a 20-minute movie that will play before they go on this ride? And they were doing it. And then the theme park kind of stopped. And then they're like, let's keep making this. And then they got the woman who wrote the manga to contribute to the story for Cat Returns.
Right, okay, sure.
So they were like, hey, can you actually help us do this? We've got some storyboards, and they expanded. And that's why it's like 60 minutes long.
Sure.
It's very short. It's probably like my least favorite Ghibli movie.
It's like, yeah, it feels like a
Disney straight to video.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think at one point it was going to be.
And the animation is nowhere near up to par.
No, but it's still very interesting animation. Like, it doesn't look like their films.
Yeah.
It's just like the characters look really different.
It's really fun and it's immensely watchable. It's and there's some really good jokes in it.
Yeah, so, it's fun. It's cute and it's really quick. And it's, you know, Muto's the cat in the fat cat in Thingy. But it's so silly. It's just like a really silly movie.
Yeah.
It's like, it's insane. And it kind of has like nothing really happens in it. Like, it was funny when like she gets taken there to the cat world. And then I'm like, oh, there's 15 minutes left. And you're just kind of like, oh, is this, you know what I mean? Normally that's like the start of the second act of a film, like getting to the magical place.
So when Marnie was there, I hadn't seen before, by the same director who did Arrietty. Yeah, and then,
which you watched in my house.
Yes. And then started Studio Ponoc,
Mary and Witch's Flower. Witch's Flower.
I don't like those movies are beautiful to look at, Arrietty and Mary, but I'd like that Mary especially felt that like kind of he's making this shit up as it goes along. It's like not a very satisfying.
Marnie's great. Movie. That's based off a book.
Marnie's so 60s, good.
I think.
I could not believe it. Yeah, British book. Yeah.
I think it was released with a lot of sadness because it was at the point where the company was very broke, and it was. I remember when it came out, we were basically told, this is probably the last feature film we'll do. And it was kind of seen as like, fuck, they'll probably have to do like TV. Like, they don't have money anymore.
Wow.
And it felt kind of unsatisfying that the last film by them wasn't like a Miyazaki or a Takahata. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, especially Miyazaki. But that
a brilliant movie.
Amazing movie.
Like, so, and like when you talk about like satisfying endings, that one is like gets you good.
Yeah, it's great.
The
big reveal is
it's crazy.
It's really very mature as well. Like, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the subject matter.
Yeah.
I love that. It looks beautiful as well.
Absolutely.
And I know there's like a Big Marnie and stuff at the Ghibli.
Hell yeah. Let's go Big Marnie.
We've got exciting. A Big Marnie. I'm coming.
Marnie-san.
Then, I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to like bite the bullet. Watch the movie that everyone says sucks, Tales from Earthsea, the Gorō Miyazaki directed movie based on like a old fantasy series of novels.
Based on the Earthsea novels.
That he very loosely adapted, like took
some things. Well, originally Miyazaki was doing it. Yeah. So he was doing it post Mononoke, maybe in the 90s. It was always rights he had. And he couldn't get to it. And then I think he ended up doing something else. Who knows? Spirited Away or something. And she was like, yes, I want Miyazaki to do this after seeing Mononoke. And then was a bit shocked when she found out he wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
But then it was the son was doing it. And he's like, I think Suzuki, the producer, was like, let's have your son step up. Like, I think he was working on storyboarding first. And he's like, no, let's do it. And then that created the tension where Hayao was like, oh, he's not ready. And it caused this huge rift.
Even like after watching it for the first time.
He's like, I didn't see a man. I saw my son, my boy. Or something like that. He's like, I didn't see a director while watching that. I saw my son. Which probably sounds less harsh when said in its native tongue.
Yeah. Totally.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it does sound like something that could be taken out of.
But see, people, the fan base have just run with that. Of like, you know, like, hates his son.
It's not true.
His son's untalented. They're the worst movies. So I went into this going like, this is going to suck.
It's not. It's good.
Like, I really enjoyed it.
Dude, I saw it before it came out at the Dendy. And it was before any of the like, oh, Goro's a hack stuff. And I was like, oh, that was cool. I was like 20, 21.
Yeah.
I was like, this is cool. It looked great.
Like, it's definitely like generic in its like, yeah. The characters don't, it doesn't really like
go anywhere.
Like, doesn't really like, there's no character growth really. No. But it's like, as a, you know, there is a vibe to a lot of Ghibli
movies.
It's
like a less imaginative.
Castle in the Sky.
Yeah, 100%. Yep, it's that, like a real A to B. I remember the
like,
poster.
It ended and I was like, oh, that was fine. What was everyone like? I
remember it was like after Spirited Away it was announced and the poster just sold me. I was like, I don't care what this movie is, but that was the poster. It was revealed. Yeah, and I was just like, that's sick.
Yeah. But I've watched like people do ranking videos and people just hate on that movie and
Ewig
and the Witch.
Look at that top link on Google. The hate for Tales from Earthsea is insane.
Yeah.
I agree.
People hate it and then just completely write it off.
Did you
Gorō
find
innocent.
Yeah. Did you find how interesting it was how much Hayao Miyazaki like writes and produces a lot of the other ones.
Yes.
Really interesting.
So I haven't watched Up on Poppy Hill, but that's
even for Whisper of the Heart, he like wrote.
Yes. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's so interesting to see just him be like, yeah, I'll do that.
He just can't stop working.
Yeah. So Tales from Earthsea, it was the first ever adaptation of Earthsea. Directors, including Miyazaki, had tried to adapt it, but were disapproved by the author. But when she heard She had not seen any of his films. But then when he won in 2003 the Best Picture for Spirited Away, she went back and watched My Neighbor Totoro, like the author of the books, and was like, yes, you can direct this. And then he's like, well, I can't. I'm doing Howl's Moving Castle. And then the producer was like, let's let Goro do it. He should do it because he was advising on the film. And
right, sure.
He, Miyazaki was like, no, he doesn't have the experience. And they didn't speak to one another during the production of the film.
Heavy.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? That like, because he won the Oscar, she's like, do it. And they're like, let's fast track this. And yeah, we're like, let your son do it. And it's like, in itself, that's a movie. Like, I would watch that movie. Yeah.
Maybe someone will,
which I think
one
I did. It's called The Boy and the Heron.
True. Yeah. But yeah, so I...
Man, what was the other one you said he wrote? We were just talking about
Whisper of the Heart.
Yeah. Oh no, you said it. And Heels. Oh, From Up on Poppy Hill.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's the Goro movie that people like.
Loved it.
So I haven't watched it. I haven't
seen
Can't
it.
Wait to see it.
Subbed or dubbed? I've only seen it in Japanese.
Amazing.
And I think I know what's going. But I do know. Once again, there is a whole set from it at Ghibli Park.
Can't wait. Yeah, let's go.
They build a.
I hope there's some Pompoko.
I think literally the film is there. About. This is from my memory, and so it could be wrong. And just don't count it as spoilers because I saw it not in my native language. I think it's about like a group of students in Yokohama who like build a clubhouse and have to get like permission from the, it might be during wartime or something, or American occupation. So maybe they have to get permission or something, but they kind of build this like illegal clubhouse. It's kind of just like that. And yeah. I really liked it. I thought it looked beautiful. Yeah. Really into it. Some really nice scenes of people like getting food and eating it.
I mean, can you believe it in a Ghibli movie?
I know, right? They're fucking crazy.
So yeah, almost ticked off all my Ghibli movies before I go away, which is very exciting. Other big thing, big project was getting through a lot of manga. So not just Tezuka, which we'll get to in a moment, but I thought, well, if I'm being a Ghibli completionist, I got to read his manga too, right?
You've read Nausicaa.
So I've read Shuna's Journey.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I should have brought it here.
Apparently elements of that wound up in Earthsea.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can.
They took parts
such
from that.
Similar vibes. Yeah.
Parts of that like, visually. Yeah, and
a young prince on the run trying to. Yeah.
I honestly, I think Tales from Earthsea is a mixture of the source text and that manga.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Did you read that after watching it or before?
Yeah, I read it today.
Oh, cool.
Yes, because I finished.
Did it remind you of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So it's quite obvious. Cool, cool.
I finished Phoenix by Tezuka last night.
How does it finish?
Fucking insane.
Oh, it doesn't finish, does it?
Oh, I mean. It does. It wraps up. It's not like there's things left in the air. But basically every volume is either set in the future or in the past.
Right, yeah.
And the past gets closer and closer to the present, and the future ones intertwine with the past. And I guess the plan was to eventually have a present.
Yeah, yeah.
A present
time,
and that would be the finale. But unfortunately he never got to do that. But
think of all the hours he could have saved not drawing dog porn and hiding it. But hiding it in that drawer that his daughter found.
He published most of his dog porn.
No, but I mean, like, imagine if that the last thing stolen from that book was that fucking picture his daughter found. It's just like, you could have got the last Phoenix book, but dad decided to draw a worm with tits.
The last big story, it's like volume 10 and 11 of Phoenix, is called Sun, and it's about a
S-U-N or O-N?
S-U-N. A soldier who, it's like a samurai who gets... like all of his clan is killed, and he's like the last one standing. And as a joke, one of the other like his enemy.
What period
basically,
is it set?
Fuck, I don't know.
Like modern
1200. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like old.
It's a past one. Yeah. They basically like they skin his face and then fuse it with a wolf's head. So, but then it fuses to his body, and then he spends the rest of his life with the head of a wolf.
Oh, hell yeah. Is this the one you sent me, the picture?
Yeah. Fucking incredible, epic. And then also, like, he flashes forward to the future in a future version of himself. And the theme throughout this is this big bird called the Phoenix who can grant immortality if you drink its blood. And so she figures in all these stories. There is something that they're looking for, or someone who appears to a character in these stories. But yeah, I mean, like watching Shogun, reading heaps of samurai shit in Tezuka's Phoenix, and then got a code for that new video game, Rise of the Ronin.
Yeah.
And so,
Bandai?
Team Ninja. It's a PS5 exclusive. Yeah. Bro, it fucking
tight as hell.
Rocks.
I can't wait
so
to play
hard.
That. I want to play that when I get back.
I've gotten past the prologue now, but basically like it starts out where like you and your twin are like trained to be assassins, and it's you versus like the invading British.
Oh, hell yeah. Fuck British people.
And then like after the prologue's very much like, you know, like it teaches you how to do all the combat, and then the game opens up as soon as you get past the prologue part. Sick. And I'm in that now, like big open zone. You go into like all these villages and there'll be like five invading samurai that you have to take down one after the other, and then you can claim that village as your own and use
That's
it as
so
a checkpoint.
Sick.
So fun. I love like big, dumb open world games.
When they're done
once
right.
a year. I mean, the thing is, no, you know me, I like the ones that are a little bit janky, and this has that.
Oh, yeah, you do. You like the One Piece.
Yeah, the
like,
World Seeker, Sonic Frontiers.
You're like, perfect.
This is obviously a lot more polished than
you're like, oh,
games,
this is broken? So. Great.
Yeah. But it's, you know, yeah, it's they've got a few odd choices that are, maybe aren't as user friendly as other game as Ubisoft game would be,
right.
or something like that, that I love.
Yeah.
But this is like, so well produced, and okay, like really, you know, it's like, oh cool, it's utilizing the PS5 functions,
yeah,
like the save functionality and how quick the checkpoint stuff
what
is.
About 60 frames, can you tell the difference?
Oh yeah, of course,
there we go, yeah. People, I know you guys been wondering,
and you better believe I hit that
performance mode.
Performance, it was like, you know,
I play performance, I don't give a fuck about 4K over 60. If it's a video game, I want to play at 60 frames.
Sure.
I don't want to. I'll do 1080p 60.
So yeah, I've played like put maybe 2.5 hours into it so far. Absolutely loving it.
I know PC people are laughing at us right now. I mean, like PC gamers
who are like,
just because they're like, well, I play every game 120 4K, yeah. But I'm like, it's pretty funny that this generation is like, train tracks problem. You know what I mean? You like, you either get 4K. But it's 30 frames per second or 60. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we have to.
Or
make-
you either have like a really underpowered system that puts out a new game every month, or you buy the most powerful system.
They can't play.
And it puts out like one game a year.
Yeah. But it'll be funny when the next consoles, like, you know, the next gen will be like, oh yeah, you can play every game at 4K 120. Sorry about the last gen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just feels like we're in this weird in between gen with these.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're in this weird in between episodes.
Oh my God, that's
right
such
now.
A good segue.
Thank you so much, brother. Hey Fam is over, but Pay Fam will rise like the phoenix.
And then we'll finish. Maybe we'll never finish Hey Fam. You know, maybe it'll just, we'll die.
Well, yeah, like Hey Fam's
Your
always about the past.
Dog porn.
Hey Fam's about the future.
Yeah, you know.
But they're both
like,
about dog porn.
Yeah.
You got to go to patreon.com/HeyFam. $5 a month is all it costs to get extra episodes of Hey Fam every week that we record.
It's crazy.
And unless I'm on mushrooms. We do have very, very big plans for PayFam when we're in Japan.
Oh, yeah. It's the only way you can hear about
dog porn,
us ignoring each other,
yeah,
like Goro and Miyazaki, when we decide to, I decide to animate something against Levin's will.
I didn't. I just saw a co-host.
Yeah.
We would love to have you in our Discord talking about all the things that we talk about on the podcast in a beautiful forum setting. And,
I saw Love Lies Bleeding.
Dude, that's what we're going to talk about in PayFam today. Is
Love Lies Bleeding.
You're going to tell me about Ghostbusters,
the cold
ghost.
The freezing bust.
Cold ghost.
The coldest bust of all.
Busting makes me feel cold.
Yeah, busting makes me go burr.
saw a fucking doubleheader last Monday in an amazing cinema in Perth.
Oh, yeah, you saw Ultraman and...
Shin Ultraman
and Shin Godzilla.
Everything I'm doing right now is like in preparation for our Japan trip.
Of course it is.
This
is every moment in life has been leading to this.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the Ronin who will rise.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's going to be a banger, PayFam, is what I've got to say.
I wish I could listen
to it. And don't worry, if you're like, I wish they would talk about a country besides Japan. I got so much baked bean talk
for
this
five
chat.
Yeah, we're talking about the one that, the opposite of Japan.
Yep.
Unhip.
John Blackthorn. John Blackthorn's home country.
Yeah.
It's going to get some love too.
Guy of the year so far.
Patreon.com/HeyFam. Come join us. And you too could be a guy of the year.
Bye-bye.
Now that's what I call a perfect episode. I didn't actually listen to it, but I read the synopsis on Wikipedia. Is it true that Angus is joining the MCU next year? Let's freaking go. I hope they get Tom Cruise to play him. He was electrifying in The Mummy. Dark universe for life, yo! The creature from the Black Lagoon has even bigger hands than I do.